Hi, welcome to Juicing the People versus O.J. Simpson, the talk show that juices the people versus O.J. Simpson. I'm your host, Adam Papagan.
And I'm J.J. Stratford. For the next few weeks, we'll be discussing O.J. Made in America and fact-check it against our memories as Los Angeles natives who grew up in the middle of the ultimate media circus.
That's right. Ultimate media circus.
Mm-hmm. That's our thing.
So we're at any O.J. news? Anything going on with you?
Did you see that Furman was on Fox News defending the Baton Rouge police?
Of course. Look, cops stick together. You can't be surprised by that.
Yeah. Well, watching the ESPN thing, if he just had kind of gone away and wasn't a Fox News correspondent, you might kind of think he was of reasonable mind.
You thought so?
I mean, he seems like, in the documentary, he seems pretty, like, comfortable where he's at and reflective. But then the next day you see him on Fox News, and you're like, oh, yeah.
Well, they probably tell him...
Cop for life.
They tell him to come on and defend. They have a Rolodex of, like, pro-police people. They just call him. He's a booking.
And he has showbiz dreams. This mm-hmm. is like a major part of Mark Furman.
Mm-hmm. Of everyone.
Well, I really do believe he was writing a script. I really do believe that story. I don't think it's BS.
With McKenna?
Uh-huh. What cop wouldn't want to be writing a screenplay? He's a LAPD.
That's
of course
true.
He was writing a screenplay. It's not just like a... put on.
Furman. I did an OJ tour with a couple.
Mm-hmm.
Who were from, I don't even know where they were from, but they're in town visiting Disneyland. Like one of these couples that does like multiple days at Disneyland, like they stay at the hotel and like this is it for a week.
Did they also wear Disney clothes?
They didn't, but this was their off day from Disneyland, the one day not at Disneyland.
But sometimes people wear Disney clothes like all the time because they're...
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Maybe they're trying to blend in.
Okay, so they took the day off and they decided to... come see Brentwood.
Yeah, it was the Magic Kingdom in Brentwood.
Mm-hmm.
But they had so many questions and conspiracy theories. They like kept me on my toes, but I knew all the answers.
Do people do it at night or they do it during the day?
Night is better.
Okay.
It's
they did it the right way?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah. And actually there's a misunderstanding, so I was like late getting there.
Mm-hmm.
So sorry. I showed them St. Martin of Tours Church where Nicole's funeral was.
Oh, okay. You made up for it.
Yeah, but it's an extra bonus site.
Uh-huh.
I wasn't about to take them to McDonald's.
That's kind of a good stopping point, though.
Yeah, that's another bonus site I've done before.
Uh-huh.
You go and they ask what OJ ordered. I think he probably got
a hamburger.
Quarter pounder with cheese.
You think he ordered orange juice? They do sell it at McDonald's.
And it comes in a big cup. It's the best place to get orange juice. It's expensive, but OJ can afford it.
Yeah.
Doesn't orange juice come like that concentrate, like super sugary tart orange juice? Why doesn't that come in a big cup everywhere? Why don't more places have the guts to carry orange juice?
To carry fake orange juice?
It's real orange juice, but it's concentrate, yeah.
Oh, because we're in, like, the cold press stage.
Mickey D's.
Mm-hmm.
It's Americans, orange juice.
Wait, so these people were asking you trivia questions on the tour?
So much, and they even were texting me into that night, asking me more questions.
Uh-huh.
They were like, couldn't Cato have testified that he saw O.J. park the Bronco outside of the gate or the whereabouts? And I was like, well, O.J. and Cato took the Bentley to McDonald's. I'm sure you know that.
Yeah.
But yeah, just these little details
that
we've learned over the past couple months.
And what did they do when they were outside the gate where the murder happened?
Oh, they took pictures. During the day when
like,
I drive by
right
there.
Right on those tiles.
Yeah. During the day when I drive by there, there's usually people taking pictures.
Mm.
Yeah. It's a piece of history. You know, they need to put up...
They put it in their photo album.
Yeah, exactly.
They make it their profile pic. They post
they
it.
They smile. No one's ever lied down on the tiles.
Uh-huh.
That would be bad. But, you know, it's all bad.
Has anyone hashtagged your OJ tour?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
What kind of hashtags did they give it?
OJ tour. Yeah, pretty self-explanatory.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. All right, so part four of the ESPN show. Oh, did you have anything else?
No, let's dig in.
Part four. And my girlfriend asked me when we started up the episode last night, she said, aren't you getting tired of OJ? You know, and I was, after I was like, yeah, kind of. Then I started watching this episode, and I was right back in there.
It's just so intriguing.
All the little, there's always more details.
Uh-huh.
No one knows everything about it. We probably know more than almost anybody else. But, you know, you got to hear all the little details and stuff. So let's get into it. okay, so we were talking about Furman just a second ago. He's an interesting character.
Yeah.
Because he seems kind of like a straight shooter at some times.
That's what I was saying. That's basically what I was saying.
But then he's also really sketchy in what he says. But, okay, so some evidence. How come Furman never, like, shot anybody? Like, what happens all the time on the news nowadays? If he was, like, such a loose cannon cop, there's no Furman-related shooting.
No, I think he did break some people's arms and legs.
And there was a part later, I remember he was talking about how he fought fair.
Yeah, he fought, like, fist to fist. He's so proud of that, too.
I like the way he equates fairness with beating somebody up.
Well,
yeah,
sure.
It was really fair. I kicked his ass.
Well, yeah, if you're a cop.
Yeah. Fair would be like not beating up somebody. That would be fair.
Yeah.
It's like writing him a ticket.
Yeah. Don't get me wrong. Yeah.
But
maybe Furman... Well, Furman took leave when he started feeling violent. He actually went and took, like, mental health leave.
He turned around.
He turned around.
Do you believe that?
Yeah.
See, I think that he just learned how to hide it.
Well, he did say that he had a 3-year-old daughter at the time and a 1-year-old son. That might make you a little bit, like, hard cop, kind of soft.
Mm.
And then you're, like, a tabloid.
Tabloid cop.
Mm-hmm. But things started looking up when Fox News called him.
Mm-hmm. He's got, and yeah, Yolanda was saying that they all liked Furman at first.
Yeah.
Yolanda the juror. She was in it a lot.
Because he looks like a storybook cop. He looks like, he really does look like the perfect cop in him for like a Los Angeles noir, like 80s noir kind of, you know, like basically what Men Against Women could have been.
Well, yeah, let's see that. You have, I don't think we've really talked about this on the show. We've talked about Men Against Women, but we've never examined the book.
Yeah.
So this was the story written with Mark Furman's input, maybe. Not like the actual story part, but his details.
Well, Laura Hart McKinney, the author, she met Mark Furman at like a coffee shop in LA. And she was typing on a laptop, which was rare at the time. She was like, I'm writing a script about the police. And then they kind of, you know, I guess they started hanging out, and then they had like a weird, like, sexual relationship, and they were writing a script. So, which is, would make such a good movie.
That, yeah, that is the movie.
I think about it. I mean, I bought the book because I was just like, I would love to make a lady cop adaptation B movie of Men Against Women. Like, I think it's becoming a goal. But this is really not the time to make a police movie.
No.
I don't know, a woman police. Because in the book, I mean, I've only really just, like, read the first couple chapters. Because it's not, it should have been a script.
Mm.
She's definitely not a novelist.
Well, let's read a little excerpt here.
Oh, I think I tabbed
something.
Did.
I wasn't sure if that was because you were reading the book. But no, we'll read this here.
Mm-hmm.
Well, do you want to read
the
it?
The name of the chapter is just...
Chokehold.
Obviously related to Mark Furman.
Yeah. Well, since you've already read this a little bit, maybe you should read it. Could be a lot of readings in tonight's show, I feel like.
Yeah, we got to share all this media.
We just talk
collecting.
About it, but let's, you know, save the people the trouble of reading this book, finding it on Amazon.
I'll just preface it by saying Morgan is the lady cop who works in LAPD, and she works in like a really like kind of tough part of town. She's like a hard cop, single mom, hard cop. Wants to be like equal. She finds out there's like a secret group of male cops that don't want women to be cops. And they're called Men Against Women, and this is like a real thing. Anyway,
that Furman.
Furman was
probably
a member of. He was, because I think he told her about it. That's how they hit it off. Anyway. The locker room was more humid than usual from mid-June, the third week of Morgan's assignment to the 77th. Dressing for Monday's night watch was like steaming oneself in a giant pressure cooker filled with rancid mangoes and pumpkins. Old man Worsley was still dumping his trash in the 77 alley bins. Now his backyard was a jungle web of pumpkins, vines, mango trees, rotten produce, and edible pulpy mass. Found its way into the dumpster outside of the women's locker room, and the occasional breeze wafted up, promising compost into any open window. I don't know. The smog levels weren't good either. She sat on the corner of the bench thinking about the smog. No smog alert today, but she could feel it swelling in the passage of her lungs. What if she had to chase down a suspect tonight? What if air pollution affected the Olympic Games and we started in less than 6 weeks? Oh yeah, it's the summer of 1984 when the Olympics are in Los Angeles.
That's a nice touch, I gotta say.
Yeah.
So, wait, why did she need Furman for this? Just describing how smelly things were? They're sitting in coffee, and he's just like, yeah, you know, it's not easy being a cop. Sometimes it smells like mango and pumpkins, but not in a good way. Rancid.
More like rancid trash.
Yeah, mango and pumpkins.
I think this is her part.
Sounds like a Jamba Juice.
Her part is like the female part, and then Furman is all the how evil the men are.
Mm.
How evil the LAPD men are. I'm telling you, it's a hit movie.
Do you think they discussed, you know, maybe... Okay, here's a new theory, new conspiracy theory for you.
Mm-hmm.
McKinney, Laura Hart McKinney is her name?
Yeah.
Set up a hit on Nicole so that Furman could frame OJ, lie under oath about it, and then attention would come to the script. That's their way to get attention.
That would be the best, especially if it became like a blockbuster movie, Men Against Women, with, what's her name? What's the girl from The Hunger Games? Jennifer Lawrence plays Morgan.
That'd be good. Okay, good movie. Okay.
Harvey Keitel plays like the Furman character.
Yeah.
Or somebody really bad.
John Mayer.
Just the soundtrack.
You could, yeah. yeah, so, you know, I would give that pretty good weight.
I love any movie that the smog factors in. Any Los Angeles movie.
And it's affecting the Olympics.
It's affecting police activity in the Olympics. Anyway, she just recently published this book. This didn't come out during, like, the OJ trial.
It was a long con.
Copyright, 2015. And I think she, like, maybe a
30-year dream realized.
Mm-hmm. I think maybe she self-published it.
What makes you say that?
It's printed in North Carolina, where she's from. There's, like, a P.O. box. And I bought it, and it came, like, 5 weeks later.
Yeah, it's, Laura Hart McKinney, producer, writer, and professor.
Mm-hmm.
No mention of OJ on the spine.
That's, yeah.
Stone's Throw Media. Stones Throw, North Carolina.
I'll let you know if I'm ever going to make that movie.
All right, so something I was struck, because this episode was all about the trial, mm-hmm. and showing clips of it. I can't believe it was on TV. It was so, like, it was so dramatic. I'd never really seen much of that. The lawyers being all, you know, a lot of pizzazz.
Oh,
Didn't you, Mr. Fung?
Yeah.
Or that was making Carl Douglas up with,
No, how about that, Mr. Fung? Yeah. It's so soap opera-y. No wonder they canceled soaps and put this on instead. It was way more modern, way more real.
My favorite part in the Shaq portion, he goes, how about that? And then Ito was like, is that a question? And he was just like...
No, it was Dennis Fung.
Oh, it was Fung said that?
Yeah, I think he would. That was pretty quick of him to answer.
It really was. He's like, yeah.
Is that a question?
How about that? He funged up.
He funged it up.
Maybe we get him on the show.
You know the picture they're showing when he's passing the envelope and it's a picture? How do you know they're not just like, oh, here's Nicole's mail. Can you put it back over there? Or something. It's kind of like a blurry picture.
They didn't do a great job in the show explaining why the investigation was so sloppy. Cops are just like, yeah, it was. I don't know what happened.
That's not this one's agenda.
But that's one of the most...
Isn't that what the next show is going to be that Martin Sheen hosts?
No, I mean the cops didn't provide a good explanation of why the investigation was messed up. Like, oh, we always do it this way. They spun it. They're just like, yeah, I don't know why he didn't bring the evidence in.
They kind of cowered in fear of the Dream Team, maybe.
Dream Team. Carl Douglas is my new favorite member of the Dream Team.
Definitely.
And looking at those videos of him, he did look in the 90s more like the actor who played him in the FX show than he does now.
Right.
I used to think that character should have been in it more. Carl Douglas's career, I think, is just starting in the...
He's so fantastic.
He was...
He's so flamboyant. I wonder if he's gay.
Oh, he might be. I don't want to speculate, but...
Yeah, I was like, is it bad for me to, like, guess or wonder? It'll only make me like him way more.
Yeah. He reminds me of Little Richard a little bit.
He's got so much of that old school pizzazz.
He learned well from Johnny.
It's unfortunate that he's the one that... cross-examined Ron Shipp.
Well, actually, yeah, that was my next note. Poor Ron Shipp.
Yeah.
What does it say about Ron Shipp?
Oh, yeah,
and OJ A to Z. That would be interesting to know, because I wasn't familiar with Shipp until this documentary.
Okay, so speaking of funged it up, then there was also Shipp Happens.
Shipp Happens?
That might be in there. You should see if Shipp is
happens. All right. Ronald Shipp, a close friend of the defendant and former Los Angeles policeman, Shipp testified that on the night following the slayings, Simpson told him of dreaming about killing Nicole. Simpson's mother and daughter, Arnell, later claimed on the witness stand that Shipp was drinking and the two men were never alone on the night the reputed confidence was shared. Simpson's sister, Carmela Durillo, testified Shipp was high and that he was only with her brother a few minutes while other people were around. Asked outside the courtroom about the accusation, Shipp told a reporter, neither he nor anyone else in the close group of family and friends gathered together the night after the slayings was drinking, indicating he may have had second thoughts about permitting the dream testimony. Ito advised jurors during instructions to disregard the statement if they could conclude the defendant didn't make it or that he was talking about subconscious thoughts while asleep. That's weird. Like many of Simpson's friends, Shipp had played football. He was an outstanding running back in high school and played a bit of college ball When he was on the LAPD, he was one of a handful of experts on the domestic violence and taught a course on the subject to recruits at the police academy. That'd be weird that they would be having like a party after Nicole died. OJ doesn't, like, that's another frustrating thing, is he doesn't seem like sad at all that Nicole's gone.
Yeah.
It's just all about him. I mean, that's how it was when she was alive too, though. Poor Ron Schiff. He's one person who didn't get, because the FX show, they try to say that Robert Kardashian was the only one who, like, lost out, who didn't gain from this. But Schiff didn't get anything out of this. Jill didn't.
The limo driver didn't. The 911 phone call people didn't.
Yeah, Hollywood.
Rosa Lopez didn't.
Rosa Lopez. That's her name. I was trying to remember. Because I also point out that house is next to Rockingham. That house.
Kato didn't have anything to gain either, because as soon as it happened,
he got famous. He
didn't
had the
have
most
a place
to
live anymore.
Grant Kramer's house. But he got enough work to, he probably has rents a place now. He's probably got a one bedroom to this day. And that's hard in Los Angeles. You get a one bedroom house just to your apartment just to yourself. It's impossible. You cannot live alone in Los Angeles.
Yeah.
And Kato is probably doing it.
I hope so. Kato made the cut in this doc. They show him in this episode for a second.
They don't interview him though.
And they don't interview Chris Darden.
Darden won't do any interviews. Yeah. Neither will Ito.
Oh, I thought of another conspiracy.
Okay.
Darden wanted to get back at Garcetti and Marsha for putting him on the case. That he's the one that made him try on the glove. Maybe he got in cahoot. Maybe Johnny, like, charmed him. Or did something. I mean, there's so many crazy conspiracies out there. I'm just adding to them.
Maybe.
They
were Chris Darden's gloves. And he mixed them up right before. And he didn't want to look like he was incompetent.
Nobody would wear those weird Bloomingdale's gloves unless you were like...
They had the Bloomingdale's buyer.
Tag, yeah.
No, she was a witness. Remember that?
Did she write a book?
Oh, I love
selling gloves in Brentwood.
There's also this part. She probably, I think the Bruno Mogli shoes were from Bloomingdale's too.
I don't know. Can you buy those there?
Where was the Bloomingdale's in 1994 in LA? I think there was one.
There's definitely one in like the Beverly Center.
Now there is, but that opened after 94, I think.
I don't know. I've never actually shopped there.
There's one at Century City. I don't think it was open yet.
Beverly Hills?
No.
It's closer.
But because I don't see Nicole going past Beverly Hills to go shopping. She's staying on the west side.
She's definitely west side, yeah.
Maybe they went to a Dodger game one time. And she was like, what's this? Where are we?
Why would they go to a baseball game if you're married to a football player?
It's
so much, it's so boring.
I know, they probably were in the box. I'm sure they went to a Dodger game.
To take Justin and Sydney.
Yeah, exactly. Eating hot dogs, Dodger dogs they're called.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I loved the clip from SNL.
About like...
The African
the
dress.
The ties, yeah.
This is a nice touch. I like that on the Dream Team's behalf.
Mm-hmm.
But that made me think we should search on YouTube OJ SNL and start posting some of the best ones on
our page.
On our Facebook page.
Oh, yeah.
Because that's, that was a, you know, when I was first in all this, first kind of becoming aware of comedy. And I thought OJ-based stuff was so funny.
Yeah.
There's a lot of them from The Tonight Show, too, besides even the Dancing Itos. Like, every night they would have, some kind of, like, sketch or something about OJ.
It would be interesting to kind of find them all and look at all across the board, like in Living Colors one, and then
yeah.
SNL. Everybody did them.
Mm-hmm.
Because it kind of relates to what we were talking about last week, about the fiction of it.
Yeah.
Kind of tells the truth mm-hmm. more.
Yeah. It's truth.
Especially in this, in this episode of the ESPN one, they're all talking about the arthritis medicine, like they knew at the time that he didn't take it. I feel like that's mm-hmm. like a, I don't think that's accurate to the time.
That he was.
That so many people knew that he hadn't taken his arthritis medicine.
Oh,
I think, they all read the books and
oh.
they know that from like tabloids and stuff.
Well, the manager confirms it, or
yeah.
his agent confirms it. It was a great SNL OJ sketch, I remember. Hope it's online. It was about how OJ like made facial expressions.
Oh, I remember that one.
And they're like, we're going to get lunch. And he's like, big grin. He's like, how about Chinese food? And he's like, but you gotta like give the face of everything that happened. That was a good one. It's the only joke I remember, but very expressive face. Didn't Carl Douglas...
He said he busted into his best Naked Gun.
Yeah.
Oh, I really... Yeah.
That was cool when OJ tried on the glove. It's so... It so fits.
It would be so fun to, like, do a... Maybe John Noble can do this. Cut together. On one side, it's the Naked Gun scene where he, like, gets, like, his hand in the window and like
uh-huh.
falls into the paint side by side with him trying on the glove. It'd be great.
Juice. I wrote down in my notes Dracula. Was there something about Dracula in the show? Maybe I meant. I don't remember.
I don't remember any Dracula.
Mm. Alright. What do you know about F. Lee Bailey before OJ?
Nothing.
He's a big time lawyer though.
I know, but he's so...
Do you represent Patty Hearst or something? I'm looking him up right now.
Yeah. Don't ask me, ask OJ A to Z.
B, Bail Hearing, F. Lee Bailey. Okay, he's got a lot. All right. One of the most prominent members of the OJ Simpson defense team, Bailey was named in a 1993 National Law Journal poll as the most admired lawyer in America. And I think Carl Douglas did say that he loved F. Lee Bailey.
Yeah.
Shapiro had just begun assembling his team of lawyers when Bailey announced during a CNN interview that he and Alan Dershowitz were coming aboard as consultants. He quickly assumed a more active role and became the Dream Team's specialist dealing with key witness, LAPD Detective Mark Furman. Bailey, who first won fame defending the man believed to have been the notorious Boston Strangler, is especially known for his brilliant cutting cross-examinations. Other sensational cases on his resume include his successful effort to win a U.S. Supreme Court reversal of the murder conviction of Dr. Samuel Shepard 11 years after the Ohio osteopath was locked in prison as a reputed wife killer, and his unsuccessful defense of newspaper heiress Patty Hearst. The popular television series The Fugitive was inspired by the Shepard saga.
Oh.
Did not know that.
Didn't know that.
During media coverage of the Simpson trial, the West Palm Beach-based attorney gained the most prominent mention for his bitter courtroom shootouts with prosecutor Marsha Clark and for defenses with his colleague Robert Shapiro. Shortly, stories of bickering between the two longtime friends was spread around the country via the media. A third lawyer, Johnny Cochran, replaced Shapiro as Simpson's lead defense attorney. In 1982, Shapiro represented Bailey after he was arrested in San Francisco Bay Area by a motorcycle cop who accused him of driving his Mercedes past a stop sign and wound up charging him with drunk driving. At trial, Bailey was acquitted of the drunk driving charge but lost his California driver's license for 6 months because he had refused to take a sobriety test. Shapiro later denounced Bailey in an interview with Barbara Walters after the acquittal, saying he would never speak to him again.
I know they're a bitter friendship breakup.
Hmm. They're so kind of like the OJ and Robert Kardashian of the Dream Team.
Yeah.
See, even...
It splits the best friends.
Yeah, well, even the people involved in his case can find something about it that they can relate to. It takes a personal embodiment.
Oh, yeah. They're that invested mm-hmm. that and their opinion is so strong about the case.
Mm-hmm. Barry Scheck. When they asked him, like, what he believed, and he's like, it doesn't matter what I believe.
He lawyered out of it.
But that, yes, he's right, but then that means that he didn't believe that the evidence was tampered with or it was planted. Not answering the question is answering it.
I don't think everybody involved in the O.J. Simpson case was doing it because they really believed in his story. They were cashing in.
Oh, yeah.
Hardcore.
Yeah. Well, yeah, nobody believed it. But, now, it's been 20 years. He should just... Well, that'll affect
his... Well, that would be like I was lying the whole time and I knew.
That's yeah, that would
affect no one wants to be that person.
Yeah, he can't. All right. That's fair.
Yeah, but especially for your lawyer.
Speaking of cashing in, O.J. and his merchandise...
Fascinating.
$50,000 a day. This is 100 something days. So how much is that he spent? $50 million?
And it's, yeah.
Is that right? No. 100 days, $50,000. Yeah. Or is 500 that? 5 million. I gotta write it out. Hold on. And somebody, okay.
Well, this is 50, also like the 000. Sign of, this is like the.
Times 100.
The signing of autographs in jail is sort of like the foreshadowing to what happens in Nevada. Yeah.
$5 million.
$5 million. That's more OJ. Those are OJ kind of numbers.
Yeah. Seems like you would have $5 million on hand, though.
Not when you're paying, like, how many top-notch lawyers?
50,000 was the total, it's 100 days ish. It's $5 million. OJ seems like he should have had at least like 10, 12 on hand. And he was making money back.
He's a lot of family members.
Oh, they're probably all
pinching off. And kids, and like, no one wants to like go back to San Francisco. They have like the high lifestyle and brand right now.
OJ spent all his money, but he. Did those autographs.
But this is when he starts to kind of meet these, like, shady autograph people. Don't you think it's foreshadowing to the real end of the story?
Yeah, oh, definitely. He's his new business. He was good at football, and then he was good at football memorabilia.
Or he was, like, learning business from these, like, Hertz Corporation homies on the golf course, but then he was, like, his way of like doing an enterprise was like still just real shady.
The part that struck me is they would bring part of the football only in, or just the number
to get more in. You can't carry that many footballs, so
that's really smart.
Yeah, hustlers.
I can't believe they'd let him do that. Just sit there,
mm-hmm.
just sign the cards in jail. They'd let him do that.
Well, you know. He's got juice.
Yeah, juice money. Scheck.
Oh, what about Nicole? what about... they finally kind of get into the abuse and everything in this one. But don't you think that... Have you ever thought of Denise Brown in a way where she looks so much like Nicole?
I was thinking that.
Like in a movie when they have the same actor come back. Oh, a good example is in Twin Peaks.
Mm-hmm.
Laura Palmer's cousin comes to town, and she's just the same actor, but they dyed their hair dark.
Denise.
And you kind of are like, that's the same actor. Denise has that effect on me.
Could that be a conspiracy?
She looks just like Nicole.
They're the same person all along?
It's spooky, yeah.
That was her way to, like, take OJ down?
No, No.
They did look a lot
I think there's a lot of blood evidence.
I liked the part, very much enjoyed the part when they in detail went into the murders.
Mm-hmm.
Like the pattern of steps and stuff.
Yeah, how he was like getting like he was it's so terrible.
Yikes.
They do show the crime scene photos. Did mm-hmm. you see the version that they actually show it? Like here in this picture, it's blacked out, thank God.
Dude, no, I watched it on the show though.
You saw it for real. Uh-huh. I've always seen it blacked out. I think in the ESPN thing, it's the first time I've actually seen it.
Well, it's funny that they would. It's already so disturbing.
Yeah, why?
What is the black bar doing?
Covering, like...
the slit, but it's still, like, terrible to look at.
Yeah. I mean, this is weird that there's so many tabloids of the murder photos. So many, of like, covers are, like, that's the selling point, like, buy the magazine and you can see the murder photos.
Is that fairly common? Publishing murder photos?
Well, nowadays we're watching murder on the news.
But like this, though?
No. I think this is crazy.
I can't believe they did that.
I like hesitated even making a slide of it, but then I was like, you kind of have to look at it. Because we talk about the dream team, we talk about all the funny people, and we read from the joke book, but that's actually what happened.
There's no nice way to look at that, though.
No.
I mean, that's really horrible. Like, he went above and beyond, but...
overkill.
Yeah, it was an overkill. But you don't kill somebody a little bit.
Well, he, like, they talk about how he was, like, stabbing Ron Goldman in the face, like, taunting him at first. Like, either, like, get in a fight with someone and accidentally kill them, but, like, to taunt them is kind of spooky.
OJ.
But
he's wearing, like, nice gloves while he's doing it.
I know, he's like...
And if I did it, OJ says so he's got his left hand on Ron. He's like, you're going to do that karate shit?
Oh, so that's what he said. Oh, yeah, what does he say? Well, let's talk about if I did a little bit.
Yeah.
Because this is uh-huh. what he, like.
He said he blacked out.
Uh-huh.
And with every stab, a little bit, like, got a little bit more clear-headed. Until it was all over, and he was like.
Oh, he would get flashes when he was actually cutting people?
Yeah.
Like, between the stuff until he was actually, like...
it's just, like, with everyone, like, a little
bit
more tension.
With every kill, he could see, like... oh, my God.
And then it was over, and he was just like, oh, I gotta get out of here. Bill Hodgman said he had an even stride after the murders.
What's that mean?
Well, he said because of the footprints.
Uh-huh.
So I was trying to figure out what he was implying by that. Maybe he didn't run away. He wasn't, like, freaked out. He was just like, all right, I'm done. And he just, like, leaves.
Probably.
That's pretty chilling.
Yeah.
He was, like, calm after.
Well, you'd think that sports people would be able to kind of control their adrenaline.
He missed sports. He was playing that stupid golf. He couldn't
get his aggression out.
Yeah. Thanks.
Well, what's interesting is I want to leave this picture. And in the tabloids, there's a print of his deposition about the Polaroids, about the beating of Nicole, and he really, like, skirts the issue. You know, he denies that he ever hit her.
Mm-hmm. He's a liar. He lies a lot.
And those Polaroids are pretty... so the Polaroids could lead to that, but... I don't know. Maybe it was planted.
They just drilled into her safe deposit box to get that?
Yeah, it's crazy, huh?
So you can't get into a safe deposit box. It's really not safe.
Well, I mean, if someone's... this is a little happier. They couldn't find the key, maybe? I mean, you have to drill into it if you're, if you've been murdered. That's what they're for.
What about OJ's sister? She seemed weird. There was that news clip of her.
What did she say in the news clip?
She was talking about Furman or something.
Uh-huh.
But I didn't know you really had a sister who, like, looked like him a lot. So, like, a girl OJ. Okay, two phrases that I thought were weird in this episode.
Mm-hmm.
And then we'll start to wrap it up. But, Effley Bailey, balls of a stud field mouse? That's in the FX show, and then they quoted it. Did you notice that, that phrase?
What is that? What did, how did you just, I didn't catch
that. Saying if you have him try on the glove, you have the balls of a stud field mouse. What does
that
mean?
That's some drunk person saying.
Yeah.
Some drunk Irish person.
And then Marsha said something like, she felt like she'd rolled a drain pipe. Did you notice that part?
Mm-hmm. In describing what?
Oh,
the whole trial?
I think the glove. So yeah, there's like, they rolled the drain pipe over me. It was a weird analogy. It's probably a Scientology analogy. Like a squirrel.
Anytime we don't understand one of her sayings.
It's probably...
It reveals another truth about Marsha.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she's a tough cookie.
Do you think she's had a nose job since the trial?
Oh yeah, she does look. She does look different.
I mean, it's just okay to talk about how Marsha looks.
Yeah,
that's her legacy. Her ever changing looks.
Well, look, if you're always changing your looks, you can't be mad if people talk about them. When you're like trying to make a statement.
Yeah.
With her dresses and her different hairstyles, wavy was my favorite.
I'll post on our Facebook page. There's a article in one of these tabloids that lays all of her hairstyles out. Look forward to it.
Yeah, I'm looking forward. One final thought: Oscar Pistorius,
mm-hmm.
the South African athlete who like kills his girlfriend, he got away with it, right?
Well, I think he got 6 years.
Okay, how come there? That's not. There's no Oscar Pistorius made in South Africa. Movie. That could be the next step for the franchise.
Well, I also thought, after watching this series, that, like, to put it in today's context, it would kind of be like if The Rock killed his wife.
Oh, yeah. That's a good
like,
analogy.
He's the equivalent. And then later in life, all the wrestlers were, like, felt left out, and he didn't do anything for them. He just, like, left them for Hollywood.
But The Rock isn't like that. He still goes back to WWF every once in a while and does appearances at WrestleMania and stuff. As The Rock, not as Dwayne Johnson. He goes back into character.
But they should demand that he keep his name The Rock, even in... It's starting to disappear. It's like,
no,
Dwayne Johnson now. It used to be Dwayne The Rock Johnson.
Yeah, Dwayne Johnson is the...
I know, but he...
Better actor than OJ.
True. Hard to beat OJ's acting.
The Rock, no, he's good to other wrestlers.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's similar. I always use the Tiger Woods analogy. But The Rock is better because he's always like grinning and like...
Everyone loves him.
Yeah.
Like he's kind of universally loved. No one's like, I love Tiger Woods. You're just like...
And you know, the police are always trying to take down the Samoan community too. So that's another parallel. Just when will this oppression of the Samoan community stop?
Yeah, police brutality.
Mm-hmm. Well,
only The Rock can stop it.
With that big grin of his. We normally read from the joke book, but we thought this week, because I forgot the joke book in the car, and because they talk about OJ cashing in on the trial, we're going to read a little excerpt from If I Did It.
No, I want to tell you.
I want to tell you. I'm sorry.
Which is the book he published while...
Oh, she's written some multiple books. He's a two-time author. Two-, three-time author.
I want to tell you, it has really good photos.
It does.
Spousal abuse. Read that.
But that's,
read something from that chapter.
That's in Dear Mr. Simpson.
He doesn't write it back.
Dear OJ, Dear OJ. Hi, OJ. Dear Mr. Simpson. Okay. Spousal abuse will be an issue of my trial, and therefore, I cannot discuss it in these pages. Typical OJ. Getting around it. I would, however, like to say that spousal abuse groups that are advocating tougher laws, better education, and other things that are important to society, I agree with these points of view. The public needs to be awakened to this issue. But when a celebrity is involved, it becomes newsworthy. It becomes hot. What I agree with is that in using my case, these groups don't care about the facts of my case. The truth to them doesn't matter. These groups don't really care about Nicole. The truth of my case doesn't matter as long as it helps promote what they're trying to do. They want to use my situation as some type of an endorsement for why their case is just. They don't care if what they are saying is true or false. They only care that my name is O.J. Simpson. That works for them. That gets them more publicity. I don't believe any good can come of deceit, and I'm suspicious of any person or organization that's willing to use deceit to gain any kind of good.
What's up with your O.J. imitation?
That's an imitation of the imitation of OJ from If I Did It.
Oh,
that's,
yeah,
how he talks.
That's the If I Did It voice.
That was
book on
good.
Tape voice. It is. It's spot on for the book on tape voice.
Yeah. And I don't know how close that one is to OJ.
Yeah, that one's like not really OJ, but
I thought, oh, by the way, see, learning about OJ, seeing these clips and stuff and how attentive he was to the happenings of the trial and like giving advice and stuff. Cuba Gooding Jr. did not do a good job portraying him. He was afraid. Afraid to juice. Afraid to be the juice.
Agreed.
Any final thoughts on the trial?
I'm looking forward to talking about next, the final episode of it.
That's the part I've been looking forward to the most.
Mm-hmm. It's thorough in that, too.
Post-trial stuff. Mm-hmm. Well, great. I look forward to it. One more week of talking about 30 for 30. Then we're going to have some guests coming up. Some other surprises that you'll find out about in a few weeks. But until next time, this is Adam Papagan for J.J. Stratford saying, don't squeeze the juice.
Two.
Ask cancer. Ask cancer.